Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. College football is changing, and there's nothing anyone can do to stop it. Instead, program heads are having to learn on the fly. They're trying their best with what is the available resources to attend to the needs of the newly complex college football landscape. Joining me now is Nicole Kraft, Associate Professor at The Ohio State University School of Communications and Director of the Sports and Society Initiative at Ohio State. Nicole and the Sports and Society Initiative are hosting an event on the subject of football later this week. Welcome to All Sides, Nicole.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So you run the Sports and Society Initiative here at Ohio State, as I mentioned. What made you decide to take your big event this year and focus on college football?
I mean, I think it is the gift that keeps on giving in terms of looking at how sport and society intersect with one another. We've certainly seen more changes than ever before. And I'll be frank that I read a terrific book called The Price, which was co-written by one of the guests that's joining us, Armin Katan, who's a just phenomenal and renowned writer about many subjects related to sport. And so upon reading that, I started to really see some intricacies and nuances that I think a lot of people are missing. And I thought it would be a compelling time for us all to come together after the playoff, the first playoff, and after the expansion and just all of the changes that have taken place to really see what happened. Where did we come from? Where did we go? And where are we going?
Yeah. And so tell me about your event. So later this week, you're having an event and the author is going to be there. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking. Well, we're very excited. It's going to be right here at WOSU in the community space downstairs. We have four extraordinary guests who are coming. One, as I mentioned, is Armin Katan, who is a renowned writer for The New York Times, for The Athletic. He's written multiple books. We'll also have Andy Swartz, who's an economist, who was the economist responsible for a very famous case called the Alston case, which resulted in the initial payments that went to college student athletes. We're also bringing in Matt Brown, who runs Extra Point. We're very proud to say he's an Ohio State alum that deals with the business of sport, the business of college football. And then not at all least is Mark Pantone, who is the general manager of the Ohio State football team.
Okay. And this event is open to the public. It's not just for Ohio State, right?
Absolutely. It's open to everyone. It's free. We do ask people to register at our website, sportsandsociety.osu.edu. I will caution that we are getting close to capacity. I know WOSU is going to tell us we have too many people and not enough space in the not too distant future. So we hope that everyone who signed up will join us. And we think it's going to be a really extraordinary event. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. this Friday on the 21st.
Okay, so the Sports and Society Initiative at Ohio State, tell me a little bit more about that, because that's interesting. You know, the intersection of sports and society, I mean, it's everywhere.
We are, we call ourselves the hub on which a lot of spokes come off. So we are a part of the College of Arts and Sciences, and what we look at, we have three main pillars that we focus on. The first one is research, and we were started actually 10 years ago this year by an extraordinary woman named Jan Bach-Steffensmeyer, who was then one of our divisional deans in arts and sciences and became the interim dean of the college. And her view was that we are number one in sports. We should be number one in sports research. Mm-hmm. So we started in that arm, but then we quickly branched off into programming. So that's our second area that we focus on, where we bring in significant speakers. We hold events throughout the year where we help people better understand how sport and society come together. And then our big focus in truth is career readiness for students. So we know how many students want to be involved in careers related to sports and athletics. It's not always the easiest pathway, and it's not easy to really understand how to be prepared and all the different venues. I mean, just as an example, recently we brought onto our board an extraordinary man named Chris North, who's in charge of Levy, which is the hospitality. They deal with catering and craft services at the university as it relates to our athletic events. Who would have thought about sports as a job in hospitality in that way? So we really want to expose our students to the skills that they need, the experiences that they need to have in order to be prepared for these careers, and exactly what the careers are presently and where we think the careers are going.
We are talking about the cost of college football and the Sports and Society Initiative at Ohio State. With us is Nicole Kraft, Associate Professor at Ohio State University School of Communication and the Director of the Sports and Society Initiative at Ohio State. So this you decided to host this event, and you're basically calling it The Price of College Football, which is similar to the book, the title of the book for the author who's joining you. But college football has changed more in the last 2 years than it did in previous decades. And so, I mean,
Which one change, like, there's been a lot of changes in the past 2 years, but which one change do you feel like has been the most impactful?
I think NIL mm-hmm. certainly has to be the one that we look at. And there's several examples in the book. Ohio State, I'll say, is not featured prominently in the book. Yeah. But there are many athletes that are here now who are featured prominently. Caleb Downs being one of them. Quinshon Judkins, who is going to the draft now. And Julian Sayin, who is likely the favorite to be the incoming quarterback. And looking at how they made their decisions to initially select the universities that they went to, and then how money changed the decision that they made, and how they ended up coming to Ohio State in part because of the resources that we could offer them. So I think when we look at NIL and how the name, image, and likeness and how it has really shifted the landscape of all of our sports, that's something that we need to look at. In addition, the college playoff is something that has changed things dramatically, and I had the great fortune of attending the majority of Ohio State's games through that playoff. It was an amazing experience, but one that we sort of all looked at with wonder to consider that they were still playing football late into January, what this meant to us, you know, societally, the fact that we were still so invested in the sport at that point, that these athletes were still competing at this level at this point, what it means to them physiologically, what it means to their academics, what it means to, you know, the society's interaction with them. So, you know, those are the two areas. The transfer portal is something that's also, I think there's so many things that we could mm-hmm. think of that have changed sports and certainly college football specifically, that there's almost too many to list, but those would be the big ones. And then coming up, which I know that my friend and our athletic director, Ross Bjork's probably going to talk about, is the House case that's coming forward, where we're going to see significant investment in paying athletes and what that's going to do to the athletic landscape.
Yeah, the House case with the NCAA involves even back pay with jump. So the NCAA gets a lot of money from TV deals, and that's basically what that case is about, right?
It certainly does involve back pay, but it also involves future investment. And so, mm-hmm. you know, Ohio State's looking at multi-million dollars of commitment to paying athletes moving forward, and that's going to change the sports landscape, certainly at Ohio State. But when you look at other universities, that's going to change that even more dramatically. I was mentioning to you, I mean, my son is the designer for Maryland football, and in the book, The Price, their coach, Mike Loxley, talks about them being the Macy's of college football, where Ohio State is the Neiman Marcus. And, you know, what happens to teams like the Macy's of college football, a team like Maryland, you know, very rich in history, but not endowed with the same level of riches that maybe some other programs are. And I think we're already seeing a school like Alabama, you know, schools like Auburn, you know, places that have typically been, you know, premier college football spaces that may be shifting. And we've also, we didn't mention, but is a big issue that we're going to be looking at moving forward, is the conference realignment. So mm-hmm. the Big Ten and the SEC have grown exponentially, with some very high quality programs at the expense of other programs. And so how's that going to affect things moving forward?
So how has all of this changed your teaching? Because I'm sure that this, you know, you've had a syllabus that maybe you used for a few years, but now everything is different with college football, and the students probably have brand new questions.
And I'll be honest, my syllabi, if they last a semester, that actually is great for me.
Yeah.
So we do change things every year because sports is the gift that keeps on giving. We mm-hmm. have so many opportunities to grow and change. And at Ohio State, I actually just met with a potential student, and he said, "Why should I come here?" And I said, "Because no one does sports like Ohio State, and no one does sports education like Ohio State." So, you know, we are evolving much more into, and we're evolving our courses to develop much more into the back end of sports. So the economics, the legislation, all the different elements that are going into shaping athletic programs and the college experience for athletes, that's something that we have changed dramatically. We also, in some ways, have access to some athletes that we maybe might not have in the past, and this applies not just to us but to other universities because the NIL space has opened them up. So, you know, whereas college football has been a little bit restrictive in, and more so definitely in other spaces, our athletic department is extremely generous with the time that they give us, but there are you know, changing ways to get connected with athletes, to cover them in different ways, to cover their NIL engagements, and to really look at the economics that they're facing as it relates to not just the athletic department, but them as individuals. I saw today my wonderful friend, colleague, and former student Sheridan Hendricks at the Columbus Dispatch wrote a story about tax preparation, and that Ohio State brought in tax preparers in order to talk with student athletes about what their requirements will be as they move forward. That's something that we're going to have to look at covering as we move forward, is how student athletes are accountable for the money that they're earning.
Yeah. And you mentioned that Sports and Society Initiative does a lot of research. And, you know, if Ohio State's going to be so good at all the big sports, they have to be good at the research of the sports. But all of these changes with the conference changes and NIL, and it's changing daily, there probably isn't any research. The research is happening right now.
We're doing our best. We actually funded a National Sports and Society survey, and we do quite a bit of research out of that. My colleague Chris Knuster is in charge of our research program at the graduate level, and we have actually Ryan Ruddy out of economics who's in charge of our research at the undergraduate level. So we're engaging undergraduate students into the research picture in order to try to stay on top of this research and focusing our graduate level research in the same way. So I do think that Chris has really done an amazing job in being able to tap into people's experiences related to their own engagement with sports and how it's changed them. And that's a focus that we're going to have moving forward. And I have no doubt that we'll be continuing to invest in the funding to make sure that we fully understand as we move forward what these changes have meant.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Lots to talk about. So just before we end this segment, tell us about your event one more time and where people need to go if they want to register.
Well, we would love people to visit our website, sportsandsociety.osu.edu. And right there on the homepage, you can see the signing up for The Price, which is going to take place this Friday at the WOSU Community Studio. We're so excited to be here from 5 to 7 p.m. Again, we're going to have Armin Katan from the New York Times, The Athletic, Mark Pantone from Ohio State Football. We're going to have Matt Brown from Extra Point and the economist Andy Schwartz coming in from California. And all of them are going to be able to really provide us with an on-the-ground look of just an absolute deep dive into where we were in college football, how we got where we are, and where they think we're going.
All right. Well, Nicole Kraft from Ohio State University School of Communication and the director of the Sports and Society Initiative, thank you for being here.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk with that longtime sports journalist whose latest book investigates what it takes to run a college football program. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Dog attacks are more common than you realize. A dog that disfigures or even kills someone is not required to be euthanized. The owner usually pays a fine that's little more than a traffic ticket. A 9-month investigation by the Columbus Dispatch could change that. We're talking with a reporter who broke the story and two people whose lives changed forever from vicious dog attacks. That's tomorrow on All Sides with Amy Jurevich from 10 to noon on 89.7 NPR News.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Now more than ever, much of college football revolves around money. Coaches' salaries, broadcast rights, name and licensing agreements mean big money for colleges and universities. We're looking at the costs of running a college football program this hour. And we're joined now by Armin Katayan, the author of the book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos, along with his co-author, John Talty. And Armin will be speaking later this week at an event hosted by Ohio State's Sports and Society Initiative called The Price of College Football. Welcome to All Sides, Armin.
Thank you very much, Amy.
So you have been a sports journalist for a long time. You've covered a wide range of topics in your career. What drew you to writing a book about what is currently happening in college football?
Well, I think if you go back a little bit in time to 2010, 11, 12, Jeff Benedict, my co-author on a book called The System, was a deep dive into the state of college football at that time, which was really infected with realignment and money and some of the things that we're seeing today. But it was literally child's play compared to the current state of college sports, particularly big-time college football and basketball. So it's a little bit of a funny story. John, my agent for a book called The Gambler with Billy Walters, there's a guy named David Vigliano, and Paul Feinbaum, who I'm sure you know, was attached originally to the book with John, and Paul had to drop out of it. So Vigliano Vig called me and said, "Hey, are you interested?" And I didn't know John. I knew of John, and I respected his work. And I said, "Well, let me look at the proposal. Let me talk to John." And once I read it, I thought, "Well, you know what? This is really good. I think I can bring some rare access to places and certainly perspective to the world of big time college football." So, you know, we spent about almost 2 years working on it. And honestly, towards the end, we were like, because things were changing literally almost every hour. If there wasn't a lawsuit, there was some, you know, somebody was threatening something or money was pouring in. And we finally got to the end. I'm like, thank God we have a deadline, because we could still be writing it now, given everything that's going on in the game.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Are you going to need to write the price number two with everything that keeps changing?
I don't know. I mean, you could certainly do it, because I keep up with it. I'm not as deep into it as I was when we were obviously reporting and writing the book. But, you know, you're looking at things now like potential breakaway of the Big Ten and the SEC. You're looking at the upcoming settlement in Claudia Wilkins Court out in the District Court of Northern California. You certainly are talking about some kind of clearinghouses and more transparency on NIL deals. No question there are going to be more legal cases involved in this, issues with non-rev sports. There's a plenty to go around, but I'm taking a little bit of a break right now. My brain is a little fried from back-to-back-to-back books.
I can imagine. There's been so much change in the past 2 years as opposed to the decades prior. You know, we talked about NIL, the transfer portal, changes in the Big Ten and the SEC. Of all of the changes that have happened in the past couple of years, which one do you think is the most impactful? Can you pick one that has caused the most chaos?
I can. That's a very good question. I think probably the average person would say NIL because of all the money involved. But to me, given the history of the NCAA and its decades of delay and denial of athletes' rights and fair market value and compensation, and the O'Bannon case with Sonny Vaccaro, that was in some ways inevitable. But I think if you talk to the coaches, and we did, and administrators and compliance people, the portal is really driving people crazy, and rightfully so. When you have these windows, I believe I got a message from your husband today, a text message, saying that, you know, Ohio State was starting spring practice today. And you think about it, on that roster, there are a lot of athletes who are they going to start? Are they going to play? Are they going to have significant time? And they think they may be in a position to start for the Buckeyes. And if that doesn't happen, well, right after spring practice ends, the portal opens. And so you can invest all this time and effort in developing really high quality athletes. And then all of a sudden, if they don't get what they think is deserved, they're in the portal. And the coaches then now have to scramble to figure out a way to fill that void. And, you know, I don't think if you look at all the coaches that have left the sport, starting from Nick Saban on down, I don't think there's any question that this brave new world, the wild, wild west, the chaos is at the heart of it.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich. And we're talking about the costs of college football with Armen Katayan, the co-author of the book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. When you think about these NIL agreements, name, image, and likeness, was it just inevitable with how much the NCAA got criticized? Was it inevitable to get there?
I don't think there was any question, but, you know, Sonny Vaccaro, I just worked on his memoir with him that came out a couple of weeks ago. And it's really a step-by-step, blow-by-blow account of really one man's crusade to change the course of college football and college basketball and big-time sports. You know, as I said before, the NCAA had been very, very successful going back to the days of Walter Byers in the 1950s, of creating this mythology around the student athlete, and you know that they were they weren't employees. They should just be happy to get a scholarship and room and board. But as those thousands and then hundreds of thousands and then millions became billions, it became more difficult for them to argue that the labor force that was at the heart of all that money shouldn't be fairly compensated. And it was really Sonny's knight-errant quest to find Ed O'Bannon, UCLA star, to become the lead plaintiff in the O'Bannon case. And the O'Bannon case led to the Alston case, which led to the House case, and which led to the Supreme Court ruling that 9-0 unanimous, that basically called the NCAA a cartel and said they were in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act. And I think this was brought on, no question, it was brought on by the NCAA's defiance of what was really gospel at that point in time. So, from me looking at it, I don't have a lot of sympathy for the association and people who are now suffering the consequences of those court decisions. And in the price, Sonny's a prominent figure in a chapter called Oppenheimer, and that was his words. I was Oppenheimer. And I said to him when he said it to me, I said, please do not tell anybody else that when you talk to him, because that's a great quote. Just and it's in the chapter called
Yeah.
Oppenheimer.
Save it
And
for
in many
save it
ways,
for me. Okay, got it. Yeah.
yeah, save it. But he was Oppenheimer. He created the atomic bomb that blew up the NCAA with that court case. And now what you're seeing is all the fallout and the collateral damage of that. And I don't see right now any real hope short term that there's going to be a meeting of the minds and the greater good is going to be at the forefront of people's minds. I think what you see now, and we make it clear in the book, certainly when you talk about the destruction of the Pac-12, it's self-interest and it's greed. And that those are two very powerful forces. And with all due respect to Tony Petitti, who I worked with, and he was one of my bosses at CBS, and certainly Greg Sankey at the SEC, their focus is very narrow right now. It's on what is the best thing for my conference. It's not what's best for the Group of Five or even the Big 12 or the ACC. And I think you're going to see some serious restructuring of college sports in the next few years. You know, I worry about the Central Michigans and the Western Michigans and the Toledos and the Akrons of the world. They cannot in any way, shape, or form compete with what the current state of the game is. And it's going to get more money is going to be even more important as we move forward. And that's where Ohio State is in the driver's seat right now, with their $20 million collective. Their absolute focus on getting the best athletes, and if they get them in the portal, so be it. So, you know, and Julian Sain is a very, very prominent player in our book. I've loved being around Julian and his family. He's likely, more than likely, to start next year at Ohio State. His story is a great one in the book. Terrific kid, generational talent. But he would have never been at Ohio State if it wasn't for the chaos down at Alabama, and Nick just didn't want to deal with it anymore. He would have been starting this year, likely at Alabama. So, the word chaos it's applicable for sure.
College football programs tend to keep things very close to the vest. They like to control narratives, especially when it comes to coverage of all of this. Did you have trouble getting access to some programs when you were trying to write this book?
Well, Amy, you know what? It's interesting. I've been doing this, as you said, a long time, and my reputation is such, I think, is that, you know, I'm trusted. When I want to go inside a program or I ask for rare access, you know, the first thing the coaches look at is, you know, can Armin be trusted? And I have built up trust over the years, and that's really important to me. You know, I have an unusual name. People remember it for good, bad, or indifferent. And, you know, getting access to Alabama, getting access to Michigan in this case for with Jim Harbaugh, getting access at Arizona with Jed Fish now at Washington, John Talty has done the same thing. He's got a very, very substantial reputation when it in terms of integrity and trust. You know, to me, trust equals access equals information. And in the wires that I work on, the high wires that I work on, that's critical. If I can't get that access, and I can't have that trust, then I'm likely not going to venture into that territory, because it's just a waste of time at this point in time, because I don't want to be, these books are not like everybody else's work. You know, they're distinguished by the reporting and by the places that we get into, and we get into those places. Even with the NCAA enforcement staff, I built up a really strong relationship with John Duncan, who runs enforcement. I was able to sit in on enforcement meetings. That's very, very rare to report from the inside out. So, you know, it's as I like to say, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And fortunately, they're not.
Now, you know, 10 years down the road, I'm betting you could write another book, because college football will have changed a lot. You talked about what's just to come probably in the next couple of years. But if you could predict the future, do you think that if we're looking ahead a decade from now, do you think college athletes will just be getting paid a salary instead of a scholarship and instead of just name, image, and likeness? Or are we heading that way?
I think that's a good, really good question. The House case, Judge Wilkins' ruling is for 10 years. The grant of rights money, the major money that's pouring into the Big Ten and the SEC, which is really the difference maker in those two conferences. You know, you're looking at 2030, 2031 for those rights to expire and a new round of negotiations. I think if you're looking into the future, you're going to see a labor union. And I think I was talking to Oliver Luck, a very smart guy, Rhodes Scholar, former West Virginia AD, worked inside the NCAA at a very high level. He's like, everybody's talking about, you know, we need to make these changes. And he said to me, we already have a system in place. They're called labor unions. And the NFLPA is a labor union. The NBA Players Association, you have the structure and the system in place. And when you come into college sports, you can opt in or opt out of that union. You pay dues. You have negotiations. I think that's what you're going to see, because what you have right now is there are no rules, and there's little or no transparency in any of these NIL deals. And for fairness to work its way in, there has to be some sort of transparency and clearinghouse, though. People might know this, it's a little bit in the weeds. Deloitte is supposed to come in and oversee this stuff. I think that's fairly laughable, because NIL deals are not always available. You don't really know what everyone else is getting. And then what Deloitte is going to, if they decide there's no fair market value, who's going to investigate that, and who's going to make changes in order for someone to get less money than they did before? Then you get another lawsuit. So I think in the future, you're going to have super conferences. Certainly, are all the schools from the Big Ten and the SEC going to make it into with the big boys? I think that's open for debate. How many from the Big 12, how many from the ACC are going to find their way into that super conference? Again, anybody's guess, but I'm more concerned about the mid-majors and the Sun Belt, the MAC, the Horizon, the American Athletic. I think they're in an existential crisis right now, and I don't have I wish I had a brighter future for them, but I don't at this point in time.
That's sports journalist Armin Katayan, author of the book The Price: What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. His co-author on the book is John Talty. And Armin will be speaking later this week at an event hosted by Ohio State's Sports and Society Initiative. The event is called The Price of College Football. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Amy. I really enjoyed it.
And coming up, we're going to talk with Ohio State's athletic director, Ross Bjork. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. These past few years have seen big changes to the structure of college football and the finances surrounding the sport. Administrators are having to learn on the fly as they head multi-million dollar football programs through these shifts. All the while, the programs continue to operate and adjust, sometimes making dramatic changes in how they recruit, retain, and finance their roster and their coaches. We're analyzing the costs of running a college football program this hour and how new rule changes are impacting the sport. And joining me now is Ross Bjork, Athletic Director for The Ohio State University. Ross, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me on, Amy. I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, even though the scope of the show is supposed to be about football, I have to ask you briefly about basketball. Mm-hmm. And I would like to know your thoughts on the men's basketball team missing March Madness for the third year in a row. Are you disappointed?
We're always disappointed. And, you know, we really played some meaningful games down the stretch. And, you know, the goal is, you know, excellence is the standard here. And we're going to talk about football and how we set a standard there. Mm-hmm. Our women's ice hockey team is in the Frozen Four for the fifth year in a row. So excellence across the board in all of our sports is that standard. And so anytime you miss out on postseason opportunities, of course, you're disappointed. When we hired Jake, Jake has done a great job of changing the culture, changing the mindset. How we operate the program is at a completely different level than the previous regime. Now we just have to get over the hump, and we need to be in the conversation to be competing, you know, for Big Ten championships, obviously a strong run in the postseason. So we have work to do. We need to change the narrative in many aspects around the scope of the program. We've got to get our fans plugged in. So disappointment is the word, but now we have to go to work. Jake is already going to work on building that roster and making sure that we're in the competitive landscape in this new era of college athletics. So we have the right ingredients. We've been in the hunt for a long time in the past. Jake's the right guy. He's got vision. He's got energy. He relates to the players in this modern era. So we just got to get over the hump, and there's a lot of work happening behind the scenes to get that done.
Now, you mentioned the basketball coach. This is his first year with the team. Do you have confidence? Does he, you know, does he get one more year try?
Yeah. You know, look, you know, anytime you're in this competitive world, you want to win at the highest level, and so when you have those disappointments, you analyze, okay, what do we need? What do we need from a staffing structure standpoint? What do we need from a player personnel? Because obviously, that's a key part of this. What do we need from a roster building? How do we keep the nucleus of the high-level guys in place, but also add to that in the transfer portal era? Mm-hmm. You can rebuild rather quickly. But again, Jake has the connectivity to the modern era. He relates to the players. He's an Ohio name and a brand among himself. He's recruiting at a high level in the future. We've got guys that are committed to the program that are high level. So tons of confidence in Jake. And again, how do we finish these games where we had the lead with 5 minutes left, with 7 minutes left? Those are the things we have to get over. And Jake knows that. The staff knows that. The players know that. So, look, the plan is happening, and we're building and working as we speak, as we sit here today at noon on Monday after Selection Sunday.
Are you worried about losing some key talent in the transfer portal?
You know, I think retention of the nucleus, I think, is going to go extremely well. And again, Jake started having those conversations well before the season ended. And then you're going to look at, okay, our guy's going to move on. That's going to be a natural part of this. So I think you're going to have retention of key folks, and then you're going to have some players that have to move on for various reasons. So you're going to have a little bit of both as we go into this transition period over the next couple weeks.
Now, you have decided not to play. You had the option of playing in some things that are not March Madness,
right,
but they're adjacent.
Crown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why did you decide not to do that?
Yeah, the key part of that is, one, we had some health of our current roster. You know, Bruce has been dinged up. A couple other guys have been dinged up. So who's going to be available? Mm-hmm. One, you have 3 weeks. You have to wait like 3 weeks to start this this engagement, or actually 2 weeks, excuse mm-hmm. me, to start this engagement called the Crown. We just didn't really understand what our roster was going to be, who was going to stay, who was going to go, those kind of things, and then, you know, a little nicked up. So we decline the opportunity. And then if you decline the crown, you decline the NIT because of our relationship, obviously, within the Big Ten. So, and then you've got to go to work. Mm. You got to go to work on resetting the mentality, resetting the roster that Jake's working on right now. So we just decided, you know, it's better that Jake is really on the road than in a practice gym right now, getting ready for the crown tournament.
Now, before we move back to college football, I want to give you a chance. The women's basketball team, though.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can pivot to them. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, again, sort of setting a standard. You know exactly what you're going to get. You get consistency. We're going to full court press. We're going to have high tempo. And then we've had the ability to host. Now, last year we got beat in the second round on our home court. Mm-hmm. We don't want that to happen. We want to advance, you know, to the next round. So Coach McGuff does a great job. We got new pieces with our coaching staff this year. Fun team to watch, high energy. And again, that's what you want to be, squarely in the tournament every year. You want to be a high seed. That's what Coach McGuff has built. So excited about this weekend.
Well, I guess we could spend the whole hour talking about basketball, but I'm the one who's having a football program on the radio in March.
Right, so football's nonstop.
But yes.
Football never ends.
So back to football. College football has seen a lot of changes, especially in the past 2 years, more than in the decades prior. And our last guest, he wrote a book about it, and he called it all chaos. Do you agree? Has it been chaos?
You know, it's been, I guess it's been chaos from a structural standpoint, right? Because, you know, the NCAA has retreated on many fronts. We have, I think we're up to 38 different state laws that govern NIL. We've never been governed by any regulatory authority outside the NCAA ever. Conferences in the NCAA governed. State laws became prevalent back in 2021, actually started in the state of California, where they introduced an NIL bill. Now we're asking Congress. So from a structural standpoint, it has been chaotic because no one really knows who's in charge. And then if you look at the NIL world, we've created essentially a false market. I heard Armin talking about, you know, the lack of transparency in the NIL space. And he's right, because we created a false market around collectives. Those agreements could essentially be pay-for-play, where a group of donors, what is a collective? It's really a group of people that came together for sort of a common purpose. Mm-hmm. But that became the buzzword, right?
Yeah.
And so from the standpoint of not having uniform rules, having state-by-state laws, having court injunctions that have governed a lot of this as well, the Tennessee injunction in the state of Tennessee allowed collectives, which are essentially boosters, to talk to prospects. That order is still in effect. Before, you could never allow a donor or a booster to talk to a prospect. So the sad part about the chaotic phrase has been, we've not been able to give our coaches and really the recruits and the prospects and their families clarity. These are the rules. This is what you have to follow. This is how it's governed. And so even though the House case is going to provide a lot of clarity and a lot of framework and a lot of structure, there are going to be people that challenge it. Armin talked about, he's skeptical of the Deloitte system. We signed up for it. We have to decide, do we want to be governed or not? And if we want to be governed, then we agree to the House case settlement. We agree to the components around the rulemaking with that. Our coaches have to agree to that. The families, the prospects, the recruits have to agree to it. So we believe that chaos can be contained, even though there might be some uncertainty and might be some challenges in the future. At least we have the clarity of what the House case does provide, and that's what we're looking forward to.
When you say you signed on to the House case, what does that mean? That means you're agreeing to what?
Yeah, the defendants were the NCAA and the five autonomy conferences, including the Pac-12, which obviously, you know, exists in a different membership form. So each member of those conferences allowed their commissioners, allowed the presidents of those that govern those conferences to say, we agree to these terms. We agree to the revenue share. We agree to the rulemaking. We agree to the roster limits. So because we all agreed to the settlement, that means we need to agree on the backside of it when the implementation part happens, when the rulemaking happens, when we say that Deloitte will govern a fair market value system. That is in the court case settlement. When we say that there'll be no other third-party payments made to athletes except that go through the Deloitte clearinghouse, we agreed to those rules because we agreed to the settlement. There's going to be, when all of this comes together on July 1st, assuming the judge, this is all assuming the judge, and no one believes that she will go any different direction than other than approving the settlement terms. So when that happens, there's going to be essentially a binding document that each university's president, their board of trustees will sign to say, this is the new structure. This is how we're going to be governed. These are going to be the rules. If you violate those rules, here could be potential penalties, all of those things. So to me, that's the biggest part of sort of ending the chaos is, do we want to be governed? Do we want rulemaking? Everybody says they do until they may disagree with the parameters of that. So we're all looking forward to this clarity, and we need it, you know, yesterday we needed clarity sooner rather than later.
So when you talk about the, you know, all of this, is this need for rulemaking, is the NCAA making the rules, or who is in charge?
Yeah, that's the part that we've got to have that clarity. So you're going to have some rules that still live with the NCAA. Mm-hmm. Academic eligibility, some recruiting, you know, framework rules, things like that. But then again, as part of the House case settlement, it allows now the four autonomy conferences. Again, the Pac-12 sort of out of it on the backside of the House case settlement. Mm-hmm. The four autonomy conferences have the ability, have the authority per the settlement to create rules. So you'll have rules that will live with this new entity that will be governed by the A4 conferences, the autonomy four conferences. And then you're going to have some rules that are still going to live with the NCAA. So essentially two structures, if you will.
Do you get a say in any of these rules, or where do you fall in with the conferences?
We do, because we're part of the Big Ten.
Okay.
So the SEC membership, the ACC membership, the Big 12 membership, the Big Ten membership. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm on one of the subgroups that's helping map out.
Congratulations.
I guess so, right? I don't know if somebody, we were on a call and one of the other ADs said it was a privilege, and I said, privilege or punishment? No, but actually, the fact that you actually get a seat at the table, I think that one that speaks to Ohio State, it speaks to the Big Ten. We actually can help frame this out to say, again, do we want to be governed or not? And the answer is yes, we all want to be governed. And so let's create clarity. Let's create framework. Let's create simplified rules. What we really have to have is a stable and a fair system. Mm-hmm. How do we provide stability? And how do we create fairness? And so, yeah, we all have a say-so. We had a Big Ten athletic director meeting last week, and we went over a list of potential penalties. And we got input from the Big Ten ADs to say, do we like this rule and this penalty, or do we not like this penalty? Let's provide feedback. So we're all providing feedback in real time, and these things are all coming together very quickly.
This is All Sides with Amy Jarovich on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the cost of college football with Ross Bjork, athletic director for The Ohio State University. Let's talk about money a little bit. So name, image, and likeness, that has been a big change. Does your department keep track of it all? Do you know how much players are making on these deals?
So we have some reporting mechanisms. Part of that's required by the Ohio State law. Some state laws do not have that requirement, right? And so we do follow up with our athletes. We talk a lot with their agents and their representation. So we have an idea of what contracts look like. One, we want them to make sure they follow the contract. So if they have obligations in those contracts, we want to be able to follow those. So we have a general idea based on the reporting systems that that come through our landscape.
Do you know how much money was made with this? I mean, this past season, you know, playoffs, national championship. How much more this season than last season?
You're talking about the
name,
as far
image,
as
and likeness.
NIL agreements.
Yeah.
You know, it was reported out there last summer.
Yeah.
That our roster, if you will, had around a $20 million value.
I saw that number, but that was for last year. Yeah.
And that was going into the season. That was going into the 2024 season, and that was fairly accurate. And really, what we meant by that was, look, that's what the third-party agreements came to be. So if athletes got agreements on their own, that's part of the collective money. The collective did not make up all $20 million of that. Mm-hmm. And so some of those deals were just garnered in the marketplace. The great thing about Ohio State is our athletes have the ability to generate their own deals based on the market. And that's going to be part of this new system. So we actually have a really good framework of saying Chipotle – did agreements with several of our athletes. Weber Grill was a real popular agreement with a couple of our athletes. So our athletes are able to garner that. But that $20 million is spot on. And then in the new model, we're going to have institutional dollars that we can share. And that total number for the entire athletic department, based on the House case settlement, is going to be around $20.5 million. So
okay.
A lot of moving parts, but you know the number was published. It probably got misconstrued because it looked like, oh, we had to have that number to secure this roster. No, that number came together based on collectives and based on deals in the marketplace, and it just happened to reach that, right around that $20 million mark.
How much bigger do you expect that number to be when all is said and done, whenever you calculate after this year?
You know, one of the fascinating things is, again, we're going to have $20.5 million of institutional dollars. That money's not going to go all to football. Mm-hmm. We have to use that money on men's basketball, women's basketball, volleyball would be the fourth sport that we're looking at as well. Okay. And then how that money's divided up, we're still kind of calculating some of those numbers because, one, we want the case to be settled. So $20.5 million will be the entire athletic department revenue share bucket, budget, if you will. That's a new expense. What our athletes generate in the third-party NIL world is to be determined.
Yeah.
And every deal will have to go through that Deloitte clearinghouse. And it will
starting after July?
July 1st.
Okay.
And it will have to be based on fair market value. If somebody says, we want to offer athlete X $250,000, for a NIL agreement, the value of what that athlete puts out will have to equal $250,000. And there's all kinds of metrics. All-American status, social media followers, how good is the team, what market, what DMA are they in? Columbus versus Oxford, Mississippi, where I used to work, probably a different value in Columbus, right?
Okay.
Because of the DMA. So there's going to be a lot of aggregated data that'll go into what fair market value is. What that number is on top of the $20 million, we have no idea. We do know that sponsors that have been involved before still want to be involved. Companies that do deals with athletes right now want to do deals in the new environment. What that number yields, it's unpredictable right now. I do think we can be very, very competitive in the world because of where we sit here in Columbus, because we have great sponsors. Our DMA is large. The Buckeye brand, you know, we have 12 million fans. We produce the most amount of content. We have the highest viewership. We'll have a big number. It's just a matter of how does it pass the fair market value, and those numbers are to be determined.
Yeah, let's talk about the TV viewership a little bit. You know, those TV contracts you have, they play a lot into the money that the program has.
Right.
You know, a lot of people wanted to know why Peacock or even ESPN gets exclusive access to these games. People pay a lot for a lot of different services to watch the games. Why can't they just be broadcast on main channels so everyone can watch?
Right, right.
Do you know why?
Yeah, sort of the old network TV platforms.
Right.
I remember growing up, and that's the way it was, right? We didn't really have ESPN. I mean, it was out there, but you had to have a satellite dish or something like that. You know,
Do you have enough sway? Can you change it?
What's that? Current contracts are locked in.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our TV deals are locked in until 2030-31 in the Big Ten.
Oh, that's a long time.
It's a long time, but in this world, it'll actually come quick. So one of the, I think, smart things that the previous commissioner did was lock these up for only a 7-year period. So you can renegotiate. You can see what the landscape is going to look like. Streaming is not going away.
Yeah.
There's more people migrating to streaming services. Now, I do think you mentioned Peacock. There's some angst around that, the availability of it, how do you sign up for it. I think some of their production could get better, so we're working on that. We have an agreement with NBC and Peacock, and so we need to live up to that agreement, but we also, I think, can make it better. So we don't have a lot of sway right now, but I do think the brand of Ohio State is valued differently than others, and so how do we press? How do we make sure we're at the forefront of all of this? So we're having those conversations within the Big Ten as we speak.
So unfortunately, we're down to 2 minutes left. But how has all of these changes with NIL, the transfer portal, the TV contracts, how has this changed the way that you run a football program? How do you keep up with it, especially with all you're talking about with the House deal coming in July?
Yeah, you almost have to have two hats, right? You almost have to have sort of the legal, the governance hat, and then also say, oh, yeah, by the way, we want to win.
Right.
So do our buildings, you know, how nice are our buildings? Do we have the right staff? Do we have the right structure? All those kind of things. And so you're juggling a lot these days. Ohio State is always going to be on the leading edge of all these changes. So we've staffed accordingly. We have a general manager in football. We've had one for some time, but we've sort of reclassified that. Our coaches have to spend a lot more time maybe on retention of the current roster than they did before. You're having conversations with agents, and before, I don't want to talk to agents. You know, let that be set aside, but you're having those conversations. So you've had to adapt, but Ohio State's on the leading edge, whether it's revenue, whether it's staffing structure, whether it's the competitive front, whether it's leading within the Big Ten. So you're just kind of changing your mindset in terms of what you have to get used to. You have to get used to money being part of the conversation in the recruiting space.
Well, in the last 30 seconds, are we turning into a professional football program that happens to be at a university?
You know, I would say it's a hybrid. Mm-hmm. Academics is going to be at the core. Mm-hmm. These athletes, they're still going to go to class. We're still going to graduate. So it's a hybrid. You're introducing business principles and business models that you never had before. So let's call it a hybrid enterprise within higher education.
Okay. Well, we'll have you come back and we'll talk about that again maybe at the start of the football season.
Right?
How about that?
All
right.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. That is Ross Bjork, Athletic Director for Ohio State University. Thank you for joining us. This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.